Hello and welcome to Press TV's News Analysis. Coming to you from Tehran, I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, revolutions in the Arab world and movement have been making headlines for more than a year. However, one revolution that has witnessed masses of people on the streets on a daily basis demanding a whole new system still haven't reached their goals. Now, the people of Yemen have gotten rid of longtime dictator Ali Abdullah Saleh, but it appears that there's still a long way to go to get rid of the remnants of the regime. Now, this as elections are to take place with only one man on the ballot running for president. In Yemen, many may be thinking that the more things have changed, the more they remain the same.
A presidential election with only one candidate. That's what Yemen is preparing for after a year-long popular revolution against the decades-long rule of Ali Abdullah Saleh, who is now in the U.S. The sole candidate of the February 21st vote is Abdurrabu Mansour Hadi. As the date of the election draws closer, officials speak of what they call the threat of Al-Qaeda terrorist organization. This, while they're keeping mute on the fact that the regime of Ali Abdullah Saleh would be kept as intact as possible through a plan that would replace him with his deputy. Officials are trying to encourage the people to take part in the election. Many Yemenis, including the Houthis in the north and the separatists in the south, have boycotted the vote, believing it would keep the Saleh regime in place. Yemen's longtime ruler handed power to Hadi in November under a plan to end the revolution, which began in 2011 when popular uprisings engulfed the Middle East and North Africa. The plan, brokered by Saudi Arabia and supported by the United States, only called for the head of the state, namely Saleh, to be replaced with another person within the regime. This is while the slogan of the Yemenis during their uprising was, "The nation wants the ouster of the regime." Since last year, large numbers of Yemenis have been killed at the hands of Saleh's loyalists, whose aim was to extend his grip on power.
I'd like to welcome my guest to the program from London, historian and political commentator, Mr. Peter Rushton, and from Beirut, political analyst Sarah Marusak, and from New York, co-director of International Action Center, Ms. Sarah Flanders. Thank you all for being with us. Well, let's start this off now in London with Mr. Rushton. How far do you think that the Yemeni revolution has really come as far as what the actual goals were and are, and what has been accomplished?
Well, insofar as the goals were personalized around President Saleh, one would think it had been successful. But as we've just heard, what's replacing Saleh is, in effect, Salehism without Saleh. The same regime, but with a different face. And really what's operating here seems quite extraordinary, even to Western eyes. In Washington, they're used to having an election with only one policy, but they at least have the pretense of having two different candidates and two different parties, even if they're espousing essentially the same policies. Here in Yemen, mm-hmm. they don't even have that pretense. It's clear that an election with only one candidate, what sort of election is that? In fact, all it will serve to do is to demonstrate the weakness of the attempt at continuing this same regime, mm-hmm. because what it will demonstrate, all that people will look at is the degree of participation in the process. Because the only choice that people have is simply not to participate.
Okay.
So it'll be very interesting to see if we have any accurate statistics as to how many people participate in this farcical process.
All right. Well, let's turn to Beirut, Ms. Marusak. What Mr. Rushton calls Salehism. What actually is keeping that in place right now? What's the biggest impediment to the people reaching their total goal, which is the removal of the total regime of Saleh?
Well, of course, the situation in Yemen is going to be very complex. And so It is going to be difficult to achieve change no matter what happens, but certainly the impediment, as you asked, is the international community, particularly the United States, as well as the Persian Gulf nations, really. They're interfering in Yemeni's politics to change nothing, to make a cosmetic alteration on the leadership, but to actually not dismantle any of the structures of oppression. And in some ways, actually, things may be quite worse for most of the Yemeni people. The United Nations Children's Fund just announced that 500,000 children are going to die this year from hunger, and a further 750,000 are actually malnourished. And this is all, while this is happening, Saleh is staying at the Ritz-Carlton in New York. It just shows that the priorities of the Saleh administration and also of the Obama administration are really not looking to meet the demands of the Yemeni people, but are just to ensure that America has some sort of ally to, quote-unquote, fight the war on terror, which is also a complete manufactured scenario, because up until recently, the war on terror didn't really exist in Yemen, and it's only existing now because of the massive drone strikes that are attacking civilians and are attacking human beings without any sort of fair trial, without any process, including American citizens. And this is just another demonstration that the international community is failing the Arab people.
Well, Ms. Flanders, now Ms. Marisak talked about that the U.S. will do anything just to keep their ally in power, or remnants of an ally. But it seems confusing, I think, to a lot of people sometimes that what Washington has as its policies, actually, if they had the opposite direction or head in the opposite direction, they actually probably could have allies. But it seems that they are very good at creating enemies. If we look at what is happening in Yemen itself, if it was allowed that government to have fallen, whatever the people wanted to choose, it seems like that the people would be possibly interested in having relations with the U.S. But it seems that this is adding insult to injury, that yes, you're going to have elections and there's only one person who's going to be standing at the polls.
Well, of course, it's not an election. It's simply a selection, a rubber stamp, with no choice being given to the people. But this is the problem that U.S. imperialism finds itself in around the world, that its relations, its ties, are only to the most brutal dictatorships. And any democratic change is threatening to them. So they want to reinforce dictatorship in every country. And so this deal created with the Gulf Cooperation Council, and who are they? They are the corrupt monarchies of Saudi Arabia, who really created this deal, and Qatar and Kuwait and the United Arab Emirates and so on, Bahrain, where there's no democracy whatsoever. They have imposed a solution. The U.S., of course, supports it. The UE adds its support, the UN. It's an absolute affront on the people of Yemen, who have demanded change and demanded an end to this brutal dictatorship, to this whole regime. And their demand from the beginning has been an end to the regime. Instead, Saleh comes to the U.S. as an honored guest, staying at an elite five-star hotel for medical treatment. And his hand-picked Vice President Hadi is handed the presidency. His son stays as head of the elite guard unit, his nephew of another, the internal security. So there's no transformation whatsoever. And it's true that those who would have been really for any kind of democratic change instead find themselves outraged at U.S. conduct, which they can now see clearly is tied hand and foot to the dictatorships of the whole region, and the fear that if they give one inch in their support of any of these corrupt old feudal regimes, then everything will collapse. And that really is a crisis that they're up against.
What about that, Mr. Rushton? Is it support for all of these regimes, or is there something particularly important for them in dealing with Yemen that we see many of the Persian Gulf Arab countries and, of course, their Western allies definitely trying to keep the remnants of this regime in power?
I think the importance of Yemen is that it's become seen as a potential tipping point. If the people of Yemen, who've shown such courage in standing up against the gangster politics of their rulers and the gangster politics of imperialism behind Saleh, if they were to succeed in overturning that brutal autocracy in Yemen, that would then send a clear signal across the region, and in particular, it would send a clear signal to Saudi Arabia. And here is the crucial reason why I believe Yemen is seen as a tipping point, that on the northern borders of Yemen, you already have a situation where Saleh had, in effect, by the end, lost control of large parts of his own country. There seems little prospect of the vice president regaining control there. And the Saudis are very, very worried that that example of independence, that example of a willingness to stand up to autocracy, could spread across the border into their own country. There's already been evidence in recent years that the Saudi autocracy is weakening. If there were to be a sign that one can stand up against autocracy and win, what would then happen within Saudi itself? Similarly, we've seen on their opposite border in Bahrain the tremendous courage of the people of Bahrain in the past 12 months in standing up to autocracy. Bahrain and Yemen could both be seen as potential tipping points. That's why the Americans and the Saudis are continuing to pour resources into those countries to continue trying to prop up their puppet regimes there. And they're even prepared now in Yemen to risk making themselves, making America and their puppets, an international laughingstock through this farce of a one-candidate election, because they're so desperate to prop up the system and ultimately to prop up Saudi Arabia. Well, that's what it's all about, I feel.
Okay, well, Sarah Marisak, how long can the U.S. prop up these systems? How long, how much resources do they have? How long can they continue doing this?
Well, up until now, they could do it for as long as the autocrats maintain power. But the problem, as we see, is that people in these countries no longer are willing to take this oppression, and they're standing up for their rights, like your other guest said. And I think that this makes it much more difficult for the U.S. to continue to support authoritarian governments, and they have to, like I said before, manufacture reasons to, you know, use an iron fist to clamp down on populations. And right now, this whole narrative of al-Qaeda in Yemen is serving this purpose, because really al-Qaeda wasn't in Yemen up until recently, and they're only there as a response to U.S. military engagements. You know, when it comes down to it, the United States is at war in Yemen. Recently, they had another strike that killed 12 Yemenis. And again, there's no due process allowed to any of these individuals. They're accused of something, but there's no evidence shown to anybody in America, not Congress, not the American people. And so we have no idea who these people are that are being killed. And the villagers, the local people in Yemen, are reacting to their brothers, sisters, fathers, everybody getting killed, and this is radicalizing them and helping them to, if not side with al-Qaeda, to at least tolerate al-Qaeda so that it can operate in their country. And so this is an extremely dangerous game that the United States is playing. We're actually creating another potential attack against our own people by fomenting this kind of problem in Yemen, when it could be so much easier to just put faith into the Yemeni people. They deserve it. And for them to take care of their own country and to have multiple countries if that's what they decide. But right now, the situation in Yemen is only going to get worse, not only for Yemenis, unfortunately, but also for people in the neighboring countries, because, as your other guest said, this is a great threat to Saudi Arabia. So Saudi Arabia, the government there, is going to clamp down even more against peaceful demonstrators like they have been over the last year. So it's not a good situation right now, and it certainly is not sustainable.
Well, Ms. Flanders, what about that? It seems like the, as our guest in Beirut, she talked about Al-Qaeda. It seems like that Al-Qaeda card is being used, some will say, some experts will say, even by the United States. We see now in Yemen. We see now in Syria. And it also usually comes along with the drones. Tell me about that connection in your perspective.
Well, the charge that the U.S. is fighting Al-Qaeda or that they're fighting terror, of course, they're using terror against totally defenseless populations around the world. But for the last 10 years, they have justified this completely criminal offense in the region and totally against the people of Afghanistan, against the drone attacks that also hit in Pakistan, certainly the drones that rained down in Yemen. Throughout the entire region, they claim to be fighting Al-Qaeda. Now, a lot of this is really a manufactured threat. In all truth, it really is that the U.S. is losing its control of the region and that there is a growing consciousness by people throughout the region, a growing determination to chart their own destiny and to do away with these corrupt regimes. We saw this in Egypt, in Tunisia, in Egypt still an ongoing struggle, really, and an ongoing revolutionary upheaval. We see the U.S. using the excuse in order to go in to Syria, in order to attempt to tear that country apart. And we see it being used in Yemen and throughout the entire region. And it's so true, as the other speaker said, these targeted assassinations, these drone attacks, are without knowing in any way anyone here or anyone around the world who it is who's being targeted, whether it's resistance forces, whether it's totally defenseless civilians, whether it's a farmer plowing his field, a family gathering. There's no way of knowing.
Right.
So the attacks themselves won't stop the upheaval in the region. Instead, they will further inflame and give greater and greater force to it. You know, there's this idea that superior weapons can change history, but it is really always the people when they are aroused from below that are the determining factor, the real change.
Well, let me turn to London and get Mr. Rushton back. Let me turn to London and get Mr. Rushton back in on this, Ms. Flanders. The people, as she has said, makes the difference. It's a difference, even no matter the type of weapons that are being used. But if we look at all of the revolutions that have taken place or in the process of taking place, starting with Tunisia and continuing till today, we see that basically none of these governments have really reached the total goal of the people who were on the street. We see interference from Washington, Saudi Arabia, and many other countries. In your perspective, what has to be done now by these people force, as Ms. Flanders said, in order that they will reach the goals of their revolutions? Also, we're talking about Yemen and the other countries in the region, too.
I think the key thing is to avoid the twin temptations of, on the one hand, being drawn into this fake resistance of Al-Qaeda-type terrorism, and on the other hand, avoid disillusionment and giving up on the momentum of their revolution. The challenge for these revolutionary movements is to maintain a focus on the transformation of their countries and on gaining independent control of their own countries without being drawn into the type of futile Al-Qaeda type activity. We've heard it described as the Al-Qaeda card. It seems that Al-Qaeda, far from being the main threat to American dominance, is actually in some ways the best friend that America and its dictators could have, because the more they can talk about this extreme nihilistic threat from Al-Qaeda, the more they can rally support for repressive measures. The people on the streets in Bahrain, though, and the people on the streets in Yemen have so far shown tremendous focus, tremendous determination. They need to keep their nerve, hold their nerve throughout this difficult period, and avoid either being weakened by compromise with the forces of imperialism or avoid being weakened by being drawn into fruitless terror tactics. So far, they've done astonishingly well in managing to do that. We can only hope that they'll continue to maintain that focus in the future.
Okay, we're just about out of time, but Ms. Marisak, as we said at the top of the show, we have Ali Abdullah Saleh now in the United States. He's being, people want him to stand trial for killing almost 2,000 people and stealing from the Treasury decades and decades. But then we see the United States taking him in. Aiding and abetting is a crime in the United States. What about this? The United States allowing someone that has blood on their hands in the country and basically, mom is the word. How much of responsibility do they have in all of this?
Oh, the United States has a huge responsibility, because not only are they aiding and abetting and in hiding this war criminal and protecting him from justice, but they also helped him commit these crimes. The U.S. gave $500 million to Yemen's government over the last 5 years to help them, quote-unquote, battle this war on terror. In the meantime, like I said before, Yemenese children are dying. This is just the most corrupt and most disgusting effort by the United States to, again, repeat the situation in Iraq, for example, where, because of the sanctions, you know, millions of people died. Millions of people are dying in Yemen now. And so, of course, we're utterly culpable of the most heinous crimes that Saleh has committed. And we, unfortunately, we're not being held accountable.
All right, we're out of time. Thank you so much for being with us. I'd like to thank all of our guests. From London, historian and political commentator Peter Rushton. From Beirut, political analyst Sarah Marisak. And from New York, co-director of International Action Center, Ms. Sarah Flanders. And viewers, we thank you for being with us. Join us right here, same place, same time tomorrow for another look at news analysis. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Thank you so much for being with us, and goodbye.